Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we're sound checking now.
We are sound checking.
We certainly are. This is the quirky bit. I'll tell you what, I know you like fairly lame puns. When we always done jokes, the lame puns.
I do enjoy a fairly lame pun.
You do. So what I did was I went onto the internet and looked at Tim Vine's. Are you familiar with Tim Vine?
Well, he does a lot
of one-liners. He says, I rang up British Telecom and said, I want to report a nuisance caller. And he said, not you again. Another one of his, I've decided to sell my Hoover. It was just collecting dust. No. Let me try with this then. There was a bit of
I don't enjoy those very much at all.
I'm so lazy. I've got a smoke alarm with a snooze button. Any good to you? No. But it's testing the levels. The good thing is the levels are fine. So I think we're good to go. Let me talk to you first of all about Cape Town. Now, this
is in South Africa.
In South Africa, the most prosperous place in South Africa.
Well, it's one of those places of South Africa where it's you're either really, really rich or really, really poor.
Absolutely. In fact, the drive from the airport, Cape Town, the drive from the airport is full of shanty towns
all along
the side of the road. However, Cape Town, this hugely prosperous place, very interesting at the moment. I was reading this piece in the Financial Times, which I've not seen in any other newspaper.
You read the Financial Times?
Only at work, because we get it free. It just comes.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not.
I don't actually go out and buy the Financial Times.
It's not really your thing.
No, it's not my thing. But there was this very interesting thing about Cape Town.
Oh, it's because it's become quite the tourist hotspot recently. It's one of those places like Vietnam or Cambodia that has suddenly...
Yeah, well, it's been quite popular with tourists for a long time,
yeah.
And popular with millionaires for a long, long time. This guy goes to Cape Town and he sees a shower containing an egg timer, which apparently is quite a common sight in Cape Town. He says the two-minute wash has been standard here since the recent three-year drought. In the cities, so basically the egg timer is so you can't have a shower for longer than 2 minutes, which is quite short. I have a very short shower, three minutes or so, but not 2 minutes. It's very short.
No, I'm trying to cut down on my shower time because I'm terrible for staying in the shower too long.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
But yeah, 5 minutes, try to do. But 2 minutes is quick.
In the city's public bathrooms, a dribble comes out of the tap. Posters everywhere warn against wasting water. This is what adapting to climate change looks like. This is the reality of it. Last year, Cape Town nearly became the first big city on Earth to run dry. Rationing, which initially felt like wartime austerity, has become normal. And then he says, we have collectively, this is us, everybody, we have collectively decided not to stop climate change. Carbon dioxide emissions hit a record in 2018, so the future will be about mitigating its effects. So he's saying, basically, forget all the stuff about plastic bags, forget all that. What we've decided to do as a human race is not mitigate climate change.
Yeah.
So what we're going to have to
decide
do...
Decide how to live with it.
Decide how to live with it, he says. Cape Town's glimpse of the future offers lessons for everyone. He says climate change is a class issue. For people who live in shanty towns outside Cape Town without running water, it's always day zero. Yet a crisis was proclaimed only when rich Cape Townians and companies were affected too.
Yeah.
And then he talks about the carbon-reliant economy, so wasteful that there are are all sorts of things that we can do. Richer Capetonians have discovered that cars don't need weekly washing, that grey water from showers or dishwashers is fine for flushing toilets. Cape Town is possibly Africa's richest municipality. Poorer towns with bigger problems get less attention. In Hankey and Patenzi, I don't know these places, in the Eastern Cape last year, water was available only for a few hours a day, and Wednesday and Saturday were designated official washing days.
Basically, that's like water.
Yeah, it's a glimpse of the future.
You do talk a lot about like what can you do and like what is realistic and what is feasible. So I was on French Exchange, as you know, for a week. And so you're on the bus. We were on the bus for like 14 hours or something. So obviously you get chatting about pretty much everything. And we were chatting about the environment. Now, yeah, it's about how are the ways that we can live with what we've done to the world? Because there's no way we're past the point of being able to improve the climate, really. Like, it will only get really worse even if we were to change substantially. I think it was by 2030, there'll be more plastic in the ocean than fish. I think it's true that the Cape Town, what they're having to do now, will eventually become what everyone everywhere has to do to be able to survive. But I think it's an assurity that will not be what everyone has to do. There will still be people who use water to do their lawns, like sprinklers all the time. Like, I think sprinklers are a really good example of something that we just don't need to use water to water front gardens or whatever. There's no possible need for that, but people still do it.
You had some funny stuff to tell me about cinemas.
Oh, I mean, it's kind of irrelevant now.
Oh, is this better for the sound check?
Yeah, yeah. Right,
we'll do the sound check again. Right. We'll do the sound check again. Okay, so we'll sound check now, Ruth. So now we're sound checking. This is the...
this is so stupid.
This is the quirky bit.
This is... Right. I think we've got to say that we've already sound checked with some crap jokes, then we've recorded one of the bits, and now we're going back to sound checking.
We certainly are. I wasn't happy
with
the
first... Which kind of defeats the point of sound checking.
Well, I wasn't happy with the first lot of sound checking, so we'll sound check again.
We were talking about the cinema, and I was saying, oh, I've got a funny story about the cinema. I can't even remember what... Oh, I can't remember how it came up. Well, yeah, one is a story, the other is not as much of a story.
Right, well...
So we went to this... It's not that funny. We went to the cinema with Anna and David. They're my older siblings. I have another one anyway. and there was like a little like line at the very top of the screen that was on there, and it was the adverts, and we were watching the adverts. And my brother was like, I can't watch it with that. He's very pernickety, I would say.
Pernickety is the word.
And so he was like, I can't watch it with that on. And we were all like, yeah, yeah, go and ask them. It's probably just it kind of looked like it might be a flick on the projector or whatever. Mm. But they don't even use projectors at cinemas anymore,
no,
do they? So
digital,
I didn't know what we were thinking. Thought it was that or whatever. So he went out to ask the guy. And so he asked them about it.
And what did he ask?
Just like one of the people at the front of the cinema, like a...
What, someone serving Ben and Jerry's ice cream?
Yeah, yeah, like, oh, the guy who checks your tickets just before you go into the bit with the screens. And he just went, oh, yeah, no, that's always on the adverts. It's like a copyright thing. And when the film starts, it won't be on there anymore. But could you just imagine, like, and David was saying, he just looked at me like I was a complete freak. Like, yeah.
And when the film started...
It went away. Can you just imagine asking some like, 16-year-old boy at Cineworld if they could move the flick on the projector when it's not even a projector?
It isn't. And what's your other story about Mamma Mia 2?
No, my other story was about Fame, the film Fame.
Yeah?
Not the new one, though, the remake.
Oh, I don't know, they've done a remake.
Yeah, the remake of Fame. And we went to see that at the cinema, and it was so nice in the screen that we asked afterwards if we could get refunds, and then we got free tickets.
Oh, right. So that's not a funny story?
No, it's not a funny story really at all.
And why was it so noisy? Were people singing along with them?
No, they weren't even singing along. They were just speaking loads. And then someone went outside to ask if they could get them to go out. And then everyone started clapping, right, like in the middle of the film or something. And then they were throwing popcorn up in the air and stuff.
Lovely. See, I only ever go to art house cinemas these days.
Go to art house cinemas these days.
Yes, so...
Sorry, you were setting yourself up for that, though.
I know, but you don't get those sort of problems there.
Yeah, you can't say a sentence like, I only ever go to art house cinemas and not expect to be ridiculed.
Are we ready to start now, having checked the sound?
Yeah, yeah, let's start, in inverted commas.
There's been a fair bit of stuff in the papers about this porn ban. It's a new law that's about to come in.
This is one of those things where it's crossed into both of our news spheres.
It is. Well, I read a piece in the Sunday Times by the guy who used to edit the magazine Loaded, which was a magazine for lads and was a bit sort of upfront. There were lots of semi-naked women in it.
Like Playboy.
No, it was for a younger audience than Playboy. Playboy was more sort of for middle-aged men. Loaded was a mag that was...
Loaded, what an excellent name. Mm.
It was a mag that was very popular in the 90s. And it was... It wasn't gross. It was a lad's mag.
Sounds gross.
No, it wasn't. It was quite funny. It was quite a funny magazine. But it had a lot of sort of scantily clad women's pictures in it and all that. So it was during the lad culture, as it was called then. And this guy, Martin Daubney, who used to edit it at one stage, has written this thing saying it's not going to work.
So I've done a little bit of research and I've watched a video that someone had made. I wanted to know more about this porn ban thing because it was all over Twitter, because obviously it's a very... like Twitter issue, do you know what I mean? Because it's that audience.
It's a law that's been brought in so that 18-year-old...
You have to be 18 to be able to watch porn.
And you have to put a driving licence or something.
Yeah, so if you've ever used Airbnb, to make it more safe, you can do a thing where you like scan your ID and then it goes on there so they know that you are who you're saying you are.
Right.
And I think that
it's a similar
sort of thing, but there's also talk of being able to buy like a porn pass from news agents, which is just like insane, because obviously no one would ever do that. But there's like loads of ways to get around it. So you can use, first of all, it seems dangerous to put in your details if you're watching porn, because then if you were, say, like a government, like a politician or something, you wouldn't really want, you know, that's for your public profile. You wouldn't really want to be putting your details into a porn website, because once someone's got that, they can see whatever you're doing and whatever, which seems really, I mean, first of all, part of the reason is because people are accessing so much child pornography online. And if you have to put in your details, that's obviously... clearly a deterrent for people. But I think there's also a thing of, like, I was just thinking, if you were a politician who's gay but not out, which I think that there will be, or even like maybe a football player, because there's no professional football players who are gay, which I just can't believe is true. You know, you can really use that against someone and use it for blackmail and stuff like that. And also, I think it's just the more details you've got of yourself online, the more dangerous your life becomes.
And people were able to get around it anyway. This guy's
using a VPN.
VPN, yes, that's absolutely right. So basically...
which is a virtual something network.
Yes, it is a virtual something network.
So it'll look like you're accessing it from America or any other country. You could be in Belgium or whatever.
That's right, yeah. It says here, it may make it harder for younger children to stumble across pornography, but it will do nothing to stop determined teenagers.
Anyway, the porn ban was brought in after a study done by the NSPCC, which were reported. It was one of those ones that is great for tabloid media because it was like 90% of children access porn. Like, it's one of those, without knowing what the whole study was about, it's very easy to just be like, oh my gosh, the children. But the children are fine. And also in the NSPCC study, like if you'd actually read it or actually understood it, one of the things it was saying was that it is really healthy for children to be curious, and they're usually not even just stumbling upon it. Like, children are actively searching it out because children are curious and stuff. And so what we shouldn't be doing is saying that all porn is bad and doing that. Like, there should be more restrictions on it, and there should be more moves away from this really abusive porn industry that exists, but it should be done by funding like sex education in schools.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you exactly what that's almost exactly what Martin Daubney said. You know, instead of this porn block, if you like, we need to talk to British teenagers in a non-judgmental, intelligent way to help them consume porn critically and responsibly, like we do with alcohol. Another thing from which we've unsuccessfully tried to ban under 18s. He says in Holland, teachers talk about sex in an age-appropriate way from the age of 4 or 5, meaning children have had frank discussions about the realities of sex before they encounter it in the unrealistic and harmful form of internet porn. Another similar subject is strip clubs and how the feminists... See, there's two ways of looking at strip clubs. Mm. I'm confused, and I'm sure you as a sort of proto-feminist would
proto.
Be...
Proto!
All right. You was, well, this is sort of the, at the younger end of the feminist...
that's fair,
feminist
yeah.
conversation, would be confused about too. So go on, what's your attitude to things right. like Spearmint Rhino, you know, which is a lap dancing
yeah.
club?
So, Sarah Pascoe said a thing... where she was like, isn't it just a signal that the patriarchy has won, that when women become liberated, men are like, okay, go on then, take your clothes off and dance for us now because you're so liberated. Or like, you know, pole dancing is a form of exercise. And it feels very like weird, but I don't know. I think it's one of those things where it's like every woman can just do whatever she wants and there's no one way to be
yeah, so you
a
wouldn't,
woman.
So
I'm not against strip clubs or anything because I think it becomes... What happens is, so if you've read The Handmaid's Tale, I talk about The Handmaid's Tale all the time, but it's like, I do study it, so I do have to think about it a lot.
Yeah, you see, we're, I don't know, about 10 minutes into this podcast, and you've already mentioned The Handmaid's Tale. I haven't mentioned The Beatles yet.
There it is. So The Handmaid's Tale was, it faced a lot of backlash because of Margaret Atwood's criticism of sort of radical feminism. But I think what she was saying is that anything on any extreme is always going to be dangerous. And what it turns into is, I think this is why feminism gets a bad rap of being like man-hating, because it becomes too radical and then it ends up Puritan, which is the other end of the scale. But then they're actually, it's, I like to think of it as more as kind of a circle, and you're in the middle of the circle, and then as soon as you start going to either the far left or the far right, you end up actually being at the same thing, which is just of restricting people's freedoms. So I think that I have to be pro strip clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is the split in feminism. Basically, what's brought it up again is Spearmint Rhino in Sheffield. They did an undercover report on Spearmint Rhino in Sheffield, and they found that it wasn't like lap dancing and pole dancing is normally pictured, how you normally see it. What they said was that the women were naked for a start, and they were touching men in ways that we can't mention on a family podcast like this. So that's what they said. It was basically the Puritan wing of feminism, I think, that was saying this and saying it ought to be closed down.
It depends what if the women are there of their own free choice, and if the women are truly choosing to be there and they're doing it because that's what they want to do to make money, like, that's fine. There's a series of videos by a woman called Amanda Knox. I don't know whether you've heard of her.
I think so.
So, yeah, I feel like you'll know her name, but not actually remember
Foxy
it. No. What? Amanda Knox, she was a girl who was in prison for 4 years, in Italian prison, after she was accused of killing a British foreign exchange.
She was known Foxy.
Foxy yeah, yeah, because yes. She was like, but you shouldn't call her Foxy
Knox.
No, Foxy,
I know you shouldn't,
right.
That's her tabloid.
That's her tabloid name. So she was treated really, shamed really badly in the media, and obviously she didn't kill this woman, but she was in prison for 4 years, which is terrifying. It was actually some guy, but she wasn't provided with an interpreter, and unfairly treated.
So it was a botched investigation.
Yeah, it was a botched investigation. Then she was unfairly treated in the media, blah blah blah. But she's done a series of videos called The Scarlet Letter, which is about women facing shame in various different places. And there was one about a girl who was a cheerleader for the NFL. Obviously, you've seen the outfits that they wear in these cheerleading NFLs, which are just super, super skimpy and stuff. And she came out about a lot of stuff that was really sexist in it, that they had to go for annual weigh-ins, and told stories about these girls who would sweat it out before weigh-ins. So they would sit in their cars with the heat turned really high up, and they were like encouraged to do that, to stay under this certain weight. And then she posted a picture in it, like a bodysuit that was like lacy or whatever, and was asked to resign, and then was eventually fired from the Saint Sessions or something ridiculous was the name. It was a New Orleans group, and she was from Mississippi. And then she got labelled as kind of like a feminist, and she was not really that at all. And then a lot of other feminists came out and was like, well, if she's going to wear that outfit, she's being treated as she should be. And like, if you're being a cheerleader, then it's, you know, against feminism. But I think that, like, you don't have to dress in a sack and be completely anti, like,
anti-glamour?
Anti-glamour, yeah, I think, to be a feminist. And it lends, you know, it's another version of the argument about walk-on girls.
Yes. And you're in favour of walk-on girls, or you're not against walk-on girls?
I'm not against
it. You don't think their jobs should be taken away from them?
No, but that's also a class thing, isn't it? And so was this cheerleader thing, because it was this part of Mississippi where one of the ways that girls actually can sort of raise themselves up was dancing and becoming NFL guys, which is the same as men becoming football players, which is one of the ways that people in the South are really, or people in poorer neighbourhoods, help themselves. And that's the same with walk-on girls. Like, it becomes, feminism becomes a class issue then.
So, yeah, you're saying that middle-class privileged white girls can go around being feminists because it doesn't affect them, whereas poor black girls in Mississippi...
Well, she wasn't even black, she was white, but, like it doesn't restrict me in any way to be anti all of those things, because I'm never in a position where I have to, because I'm supported in education and all that kind of stuff, and I would never be...
Yeah, no, I'll take your point.
You know what I mean?
I'll take your point, and the same thing does apply to Spearmint Rhino.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. But then you just get into a question of how far are these girls choosing to do it because it's their only option, or choosing to do it because they want to do it?
Yes, I know. I suspect in a lot of cases nobody would particularly choose to do that sort of work, but then again, nobody would maybe choose to
do it boring office job. Like,
precisely,
which is better?
Yeah. Let's take a short break and then.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have some music. Now, I've listened to your tune. We'll start, with yours this week. I listened to it all the way through, and it was a real shame to only play 20 seconds, because I thought it was a great track. So we'll play it. We'll play it.
And then I'll explain.
And then you can explain it. It's called Blue Lights.
Don't you run when you hear the sirens coming.
Blue lights, obviously, of a police vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Which I didn't realise the first time I listened to it. I had to listen to it like twice, and then I was like, ah, blue lights, I understand now. So it's by a girl called Georgia Smith.
Is it pronounced Georgia?
Yeah, Georgia.
Ah,
why? How are you pronouncing it?
Jonja. It's J-O-N-J-A.
No, J-O-R-J-A.
Oh, it's an R, is it?
It's an R.
Georgia.
Yeah.
Right.
Georgia Smith. This is her most famous, most popular song or whatever. And it's probably not my favourite anymore, because I like some of the other ones. But I thought this one's got a really good message as well, because it's kind of about gun crime and knife crime in London, which is quite apt. It so, is. Right now.
Well, and of course, I was talking to you about school exclusions.
We were talking in the car.
And being a big factor in knife crime. And that's really about, you know, how it starts. You know, you're a little bit disruptive in school and then you're excluded from school and then you're on the street and the devil makes work for idle hands and all that stuff. And that's what the song's about, really, in many ways.
But she's got such a pretty voice.
Sounds a bit like Lily Allen.
No, she doesn't sound like Lily Allen I don't think so. No,
a bit like Amy Winehouse to an extent.
I think she's quite original, though. Like, I think she's not...
I think it's maybe the London thing, the London sort of accent.
But she doesn't sound like Lily Allen's style at all.
No, not the style, but the voice sounds similar.
Really? Because
she's got the same intonation, I think, but I might be wrong.
Anyway. I don't completely agree.
Anyway, it's 20 seconds of Georgia.
Georgia.
I don't know why. I'm sure it had an N on it.
No, it's an R.
Oh,
okay. I think in her like logo thing, it's like quite a deep R, maybe. But it's definitely, definitely Georgia Smith.
Georgia Smith and Blue Lights. Now, unlike you, I sometimes take guidance from the emailers. You know, emailers are always suggesting tunes, and you usually ignore them. But
Sometimes I just because I forget to listen to them, not because I'm like listening to them and then deciding that I don't like
you're
it.
You're just being a bit slack, really. Well, I've got this email from James Blacklock. And he says, hi, Martin. And he's, I assume he must have been a teacher at some stage or a youth worker. He said he was talking to a group of teenagers. And he says, I was greatly...
He has a lot of kids.
He might have a load of teenagers of his own, but it did sound like it was in a school context. He said, I was greatly surprised to learn that none of them had ever heard Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell. I instructed them, that's why I thought it must be kids in a school, to check out Joni's early album Clouds, and in particular Joni's version of Both Sides Now. I also told them that every single girlfriend I'd had during my 20s had a copy of Joni's later album Blue amongst their often fairly meagre collection. I suspect Ruthie may already be familiar with Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, I am quite familiar with Joni Mitchell, only because it gets so many references in films.
Yes.
So then I was like, Joni Mitchell, who's she?
Yeah, and a lot of the people that you admire, writers and things, reference Joni Mitchell.
I can't remember who it is that references Joni Mitchell a lot. I can't remember.
Well, loads of people do. He says, anyway, so instead, so he's not suggesting I play with Joni Mitchell because he thinks she doesn't know Joni Mitchell.
What a roller coaster.
What a roller coaster indeed. So instead, I suggest Light Flight by Pentangle, who were a sort of British... folk, jazz, sort of hippie-ish, early 70s band. I suggest Light Flight by Pentangle as a possibility. And this was featured on an album called Basket of Light. It was also the theme from a TV show, Take Three Girls, the TV show, set in swinging London.
Swinging London.
Yes. Take Three Girls, a television drama series broadcast by the BBC between 1969 and 1971, which follows three young women sharing a flat in swinging London. I have no recollection of Take Three Girls at all. And I spoke to your mother and she doesn't either.
Right.
So, yeah.
Should we play your song then?
Sure, let's play. Have we gone on about it too much?
Yeah, just slightly.
Okay, here's the song.
Let's get away, you say, find a better place. Miles and miles away from the city's race. Look around for someone lying in the sunshine, marking time. Hear the sighs, close your eyes. Ba-da-ba-doo-da-da-da-ba-doo-da-da.
It's Joni Mitchell.
It's not Joni Mitchell, but it does sound a bit like
it. Does sound quite like Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, but that was very popular, late 60s, early 70s. Light Flight by Pentangle. John Renbourn. John Renbourn was a guitarist quite well known in the folk world. And so we've come up with a couple of winners. I like your tune, you like my tune.
If you do have any suggestions of songs, and you do want to email them in, for me to ignore them. No, it's the email is martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
So let's...
You can find the full versions of both of those songs, so Blue Lights by Georgia Smith and something by Pentang.
Light Flight
by Pentang on the Spotify playlist.
Pentangle. You know, it's
I was thinking
like
Pentang, like Wu-Tang Clan. No,
it's more like, you know, folky, hippie-ish Pentangle symbols.
Oh, like kind of like what they call those witches.
Yeah, like those witches, white witches.
No. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Exactly what you're talking about.
Wiccan,
yeah.
Like, kind of like that. You can find them on Spotify. You can search for either Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and that'll get you to the playlist, or just Martin and Ruth, and that'll get you to our profile, and then you can get the playlist from that.
So you've forgotten all this because we've been away for a week, and out of practice. Tell us about France. What are you writing to France?
Like it. Big France fan.
But has the French exchange scheme improved your French?
Like, it has, in terms of I would feel more confident going to live in France for a month or whatever. But it's not really helped with passing an exam in French. But that's because language exams are so stupid, because how do you measure how much someone knows a language? Yeah. So I've got my French speaking exam this week, my, like, proper one, on Friday. And I've got to do you get a stimulus card on a part of French culture, and then you have to talk about it for, like, 6 minutes. I don't remember. You have to talk about it. And, like, it doesn't really help with stuff like that. Or I've got to do a project, and I've done mine about Maurice Chevalier.
Nazi or not?
I go not, generally. I think that when you start doing research, you actually realise that a lot of it is just completely unfounded claims.
You always think of him as a great collaborator with the not Nazi occupation.
Yeah. So, like, this is good, doing a bit of revision. So there was a list that Charles de Gaulle and the people in England, Free French in London, like, put together, and it had his name on, and it got sent over to France, and they read out his name, and once they did that, the damage had kind of already been done, and everyone believed that he was a collaborator, and they sent a message to London to say, no, Maurice Chevalier is not a collaborator, like, don't put him on the list, but then it had already been done, so you think he's a collaborator.
But he continued to work.
Yeah. He performed at the Casino de Paris, which was financed by the Nazis, but he was actually hiding a Jewish family, and his wife at the time, called Nita Reyer, was Jewish, and the Nazis and the Vichy government knew about that, so he was kind of in a position where if he didn't collaborate to an extent, they would kill his wife, which, like, you obviously would perform a cabaret to do that. And then another thing that is cited often, that he performed at the camp, the Altengrabau camp, and that was actually where he was injured in World War One, and he was there for 2 years as a prisoner of war at the Altengrabau camp. So obviously he would want to perform there, like, I think that's fair. And he only performed there in return for 10 soldiers being freed. So I don't really most of the evidence that people use to say he's a collaborator, it's not, like, the full story or anything. And then a lot of people say that he stayed in France, but, like, I don't think that necessarily staying in France makes you a collaborator.
But if you really want to know the truth about the Vichy government and get a full, accurate picture, Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, as we said in the last podcast. Well, having dipped into the emails for our music suggestion, should we do the rest of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Ed Smith. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Ed Smith, does he mean the Middlesex and England cricketer? No, it's a different Ed Smith.
That was exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
Having just binge-listened to almost your whole back catalogue of fantastic podcasts...
Got some free time on his hands.
I felt compelled to email you to point out my single favourite moment. As a born and bred Wakefield person, so this will be some of the next... living outside Wakefield now. I hugely enjoyed hearing Ruth talk about the Tom Rosenthal track Go Solo from the podcast on the 20th of September. It's almost like it was planned to choose a song with a title that does not have a single syllable that someone from Wakefield could pronounce. I have just spent the whole afternoon saying out loud to myself, Go Solo.
Yeah, no, it's true. You can't do us, can you, really?
No, and laughing out loud, or lolling, as the kids might say. Keep up the great work, says Ed Smith. A big fan of... What's the song?
Go Solo. Oh.
big fan of Go Solo. Hugh Besson says, I'm prompted to write by Ruth's comment, re-parenthood, and by, I don't know what you said about parenthood, he said anyway, and by the hate mail recently received. Firstly, the hate mail. The reason I like the pod is the interaction between a father and a teenager, partly because I'm in the same boat, and partly because it's fascinating. If idiots don't get that, ignore them. But you ignoring them anyway.
I was ignoring them after being wildly upset.
well, this was the parenthood comment, because he says, secondly, Ruth, you may think it's easy for a parent to stand aside and let their teen get on with life. But that is actually...
I remember now.
Yes,
I remember.
That is actually the hardest thing in the world. As Martin will no doubt tell you at length, we grew up in a different world. I've told you at length, no mobiles, no social media, nor about once a week I tell you about the fact of life before the internet and everything.
Yeah. Once a week. Generous.
Yeah, four or five cable channels. I was never particularly keen on going to my room as a teenager, as there was no heating up there. I do, because that's another thing I've told you about, no central heating, no TV, and only a radio to listen to. So you lot are very different to us, and annoyingly, you don't come with an instruction manual, as people always say. The world is a much more dangerous place than it was in our day.
Do you think?
Well, I think the difference that he's trying to point out is that in our day...
We've got a lot more.
Well, no, not so much. I think the difference is, in my day, when I was 17, I'd say to my parents, oh, I'm fed up, I'm going upstairs to my room. I'd go upstairs to my room. What damage can I be doing in my room? Mm. Basically, I could be listening to the radio.
Yeah.
The difference that I think Hugh is trying to point to is these days, if your teenager says, I'm going to the room, we have absolutely no idea what you could be doing in terms of on your mobile phone, community,
you have, like, everything
who you could be talking to, what you could be watching, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an interesting difference, isn't it, between those days and now.
You could never truly know what your kid was getting up to then, and you can't know now. Like,
no, but you'd know that they weren't looking at anything on the internet because it didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know they weren't phoning anybody because they weren't, you know, we didn't have mobile phones. So
true.
You see that. In fact, he's not alone, Hugh Besant, in saying how difficult it is to bring up kids.
No, I do think it's difficult. I wasn't being like...
No. But you were saying the solution is, to, you know, just to...
I think that sometimes, like, all those
sometimes
things about parenting teenagers and stuff, I think the one big bit of advice is, like, they'll probably be okay, like, don't stress.
Well, that's my attitude. Not Martin Freeman's attitude, though.
Oh, really?
You know Martin Freeman?
Yeah, I love Martin Freeman.
Bilbo Baggins?
Yeah, my best friend is called Tilly, and I call her Tilbo Baggins.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
He says, and this is, he was doing an interview on Desert Island Discs, he says, being a parent can make you feel angrier than anything else in the world. I had never felt so much rage in my life until I'd become a parent. He says, I try my best. I'm very demonstrably loving. There's a lot of telling each other we love each other, but there's a lot of shouting. He says, the difference between being a parent and not being a parent is about 47 light years. I don't quite know what he means by that.
What?
Adding, there's no manual for it, again, and you're not prepared for how viscerally challenging it is. The actor had two children, Joe, 13, and Grace, 10, with the actress Amanda Abington during a 16-year relationship before they split. So that could have made it a wee bit more difficult, the fact that they'd split. Fatherhood has proved a rich source of comedy for Freeman, who's writing a new television comedy called Breeders. And I found it shocking, exploiting your children for commercial gain. It's outrageous. How could he?
I don't understand his thing about light years, though.
No,
that's confusing.
Yeah, he's an actor. thank you, Martin Bolton, as well, who says he loves the podcast. And Neville Ward says, thank you both for your very enjoyable podcast. So this is sort of balancing the mountains
mail.
Of hate mail we get, which I'm not reading out. He says, circadian rhythms. He said, I enjoyed the chat about that. It's a subject that interests me for a variety of reasons. And if you're interested in finding out more, I can really recommend this. Basically, it's a BBC podcast. Well, it's not a podcast, it's a BBC programme, which I think you could probably get on BBC Sounds or those things. Melvin Bragg does a programme called In Our Time. So if you just look for that. But they discuss the evolution and role of circadian rhythms, the so-called body clock, influencing a daily cycle of physical, behavioural and mental changes, says Neville Ward. So I'm going to listen to that and I'll maybe be able to enlighten you. Or you can listen to it. You're busy with your French oral, aren't you?
Yeah.
But I'll have a listen to that and we can talk about circadian rhythms because last week we weren't entirely sure what they were. And if you do want to email us, just to repeat that address again, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. I'd like to talk a wee bit now about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, there's going to be a new series.
I'm so excited. April 20th, is it?
People are so obsessed with Game of Thrones.
It's excellent. One of them, Dad, before you say anything.
Well, the finale of Game of Thrones is the most closely guarded secret in television, with the creators going to extraordinary lengths to keep it under wraps. You know, people are dying to know what happens in the finale.
I don't know why, though, because, like it's so... There was an episode last season or something that got leaked, and people, like, watched it, like, on terrible versions online. It's like, just wait the 20 days or whatever, because it's so much more satisfying to watch it if you have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, during the filming of this final series, numerous sets in Northern Ireland, because they filmed some of it over there, were targeted by drones trying to take any pictures that might have revealed the ending.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah, well, HBO, the people who make it, even considered hiring eagles and falcons to falcons to combat drones. And I thought to myself, I'd rather watch that than watch the programme.
Yeah.
This battle between the drones and the eagles and the falcons. But anyway, the solution they came up with, they were so worried about these drones, they filmed the most confidential scenes close to Belfast Airport, which is a drone exclusion zone. So drones are excluded from the airport
area,
and that's where they filmed it. But people just want to know.
No, I don't want to know. And the problem is, like, you can't avoid it. Like, if someone leaks it all, like, it's really difficult to avoid it on Twitter. Like, I don't follow any of the Game of Thrones accounts or anything, because I know that sometimes it comes out earlier in America, and I don't want to accidentally ruin it for myself, because I, like, love watching it, and it's just such a shame if you ruin something like that.
Yes, and we were arguing about...
I hope it lives up to expectations.
I have seen people tweeting and stuff saying that it is just an excuse for a bit of soft porn.
Oh, that's such... it's such rubbish. Like, it's just such rubbish, really.
Yeah. So that's not true, then?
No, it's not true at
all. What's the appeal of it?
So this is what I think. People think that they love the dragons and they love the sword fights and they love the fire and the ships and the wall and the spectacle of it. But actually, what they love is the character relationships. And it's really, really well written. So it's David Weiss and something Dobrik. No, two guys, and they're called... They've both got names beginning with D, because they sometimes get called the double Ds. But they write it really brilliantly, so you have all these really lovely, like, character moments and stuff, and I think that, like, it is a great story, and it reflects so much...
Is it set
much.
In the future, then?
No.
In the past?
So it's set in, like, a medieval-esque world, but it's also kind of... Because it's kind of fantasy. It's kind of like... So it's like fantasy, but it's also kind of medieval. But some people have a theory that it's set in the very far future after the world's, like, changed and restarted and whatever. But I think it doesn't really matter. And it reflects so much of the things of our time. Like, the struggle for power is like a... It's just like a theme that is in everything like that. Like, struggles for power and corruption and all that kind of stuff is just... Like, universal. And
I must watch it. When the new series comes out, can I just pick it up from there?
No, absolutely not.
You have to
watch it from the start.
How much time do I have to invest in that?
Quite a lot of time.
Oh, goodness me.
It's worth it, though. It's really great. The last season, there was a couple of disappointing episodes or whatever, but some people gave it a bit too much of a hard time, and I was like, it's not as bad as that. But I am excited. I hope that it just lives up to... I hope people don't... Like, people are just nitpicking with it, like, sometimes, and looking for all the stuff that's wrong.
So, Ruth, do you have a meme of the week for us?
Yeah, but it's not really a meme. It's like a Tumblr post that's quite long, so I don't think it would really be classed as a meme, but it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny, but it's interesting. Anyway, we think Greeks were very rational people and all, until we learn about the Buphonia, an Athenian ritual where a labouring ox had to be sacrificed, but at the same time, this was considered a terrible crime. So, when the priest killed it with an axe, he had to throw it aside and get the heck out of there, running for his life. Then, the rest of the people discovered the crime scene and blamed the axe, the only one present. The axe was immediately carried before the court of the Pyrrhitanium, which charged the axe with having caused the death of the ox. Sometimes it was absolved, others it was thrown into the sea. You cannot tell me they didn't do all of this with a sense of humour. And then it says, Athena, goddess of wisdom, watching her dumbass patron city do this. And then it's a picture from, like, The Office, which is quite funny.
Yes, it's a picture of somebody looking nonplussed, really.
Nonplussed?
Nonplussed.
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 There you go.
So, Ruth, thank you. If you want to get in touch with us on email, as we mentioned, Martin and Ruth.
Do you think we've mentioned it enough? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think you can always handle another mention. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And if during the week you spot a meme that you think is particularly amusing, by all means suggest it to us, because sometimes we find difficulty, don't we, getting a meme of the week?
We do.
Yeah. So by all means mention it to us, and we'll obviously give you a mention on the podcast, and we'll pass it on to the listening thousands. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to find the tunes,
You can go over to Spotify and search for Martin and Ruth, or Ruthie, Me and My Dad.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.